Yo, Thought Warriors. What is up? Kyle Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
No Flex Zone! Have you seen that commercial?
I have not seen this commercial.
I don't see commercials.
You know? I guess you watch you're probably watching the game and that's how you see your commercials. I don't see commercials like this.
They won't stop playing the commercial. They won't stop playing the Wingstop commercial with the black people playing Jenga and getting wings. Actually, cue the commercial up so Rachel can see it. Look at this.
No flex zone!
Look, it stops.
No flex.
Look, it stops. They eat. Look. The nigga and his chicken.
They know better.
They put the chicken. So look. I gotta say something about this.
What?
At first, I didn't have a problem with this commercial.
Wait, you do?
I do. Because if you notice, he was playing Jenga in the commercial. And he was trying to concentrate. And you know what they used to break his concentration?
A chicken sandwich.
These niggas and they chicken.
Okay.
I gotta say, like, these niggas and they chicken. I'll tell you what.
Wouldn't it have been worse if she, like, threw a drumstick in his face? The chicken sandwich softened it a bit. I gotta tell you. I don't have a problem with this commercial. I really don't.
You think a chicken sandwich is more dignified than, like, just a piece of regular fried chicken?
I can't explain it.
I'll be honest with you. I can't. That tank makes sense for some reason.
There's something about a drumstick. Imagine if she had a drumstick in his face. We would have been like, wait a minute.
Like that tank, if she would have waved the actual drumstick, for some reason it's more primal. Rachel, that's a good ass tank.
Exactly. It would have been totally different. I don't have a problem with this commercial. There's no over smiling. They aren't singing. They aren't dancing. It's just like, hey, I too love Wingstop. I would get distracted from the game to take a bite out of my Wingstop. You got the cup, you're drinking out of it. I had it last night at 12:30 in the morning. Like this is an appropriate commercial. It wasn't too much. It was just enough. A black family gathered around the table.
You know what keeps a black family together?
Community. This was nice. What?
Well, no, it's like a chicken. You know what I'm gonna do? I want to do this. I'm calling out to all brands. Calling out to all brands that use niggas and use chicken. I'm serious. I want to do a revolutionary chicken commercial. I want to do a black family. Like? It's easy. I want to do a black family that's like. Because let's just go take the trope all the way. I want to do a chicken commercial that combines the chicken with like protest.
You know? No.
Because look, why they already do it. They already put us at Chicken Central. So look, this is my chicken commercial. Somebody's going to do this because they did it with Pepsi, with the protest. People are going, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. Everybody's walking down the street. Hey, we want justice. And then they start falling over because they're famished. Oh, my God. They're famished. And, we can't march. We're not going to be able to march that much further, Jamal, if we don't have something in our stomachs. And all of a sudden, they turn around and they see a Popeyes lady out. She got the plastic over her hands. You know what I mean? She got the shit on. She got the Popeyes apron. She's like, come on, babies. Come on, it could be that same black Popeyes lady that people thought actually owned Popeyes. Come on, babies. They go in there, they eat chicken, but they get so fucked up off chicken that they forgot they was protesting. Now, they don't even want to protest no more because they got the chicken in their stomachs and everything is right with the world. And then it's Popeyes. We'll take the edge off, niggas. That's the whole commercial. The woman comes out there, then they all get jobs at Popeyes, and they don't even. And then like more protesters are walking by, and they're like, "Do you want to come protest?" And they're like, "Can't protest, cause we got an 8-piece family meal deal for $13.99. Look, if they gonna fuck with us, Wanda, there was a white person that just went that passed in the back.
That was Katie.
See what I'm saying? The white people are like, you talk about this type of shit and they appear. Katie wasn't in here for nothing else, and then Katie just popped up. I saw her out of the corner.
You were talking about white people. You were talking about white people.
And then white people just popped up.
You literally walked by.
I seen a white. I saw a white person. I felt it.
Vance, being messy. You didn't feel it. Wait. You literally just described they cloned Tyrone. I need you to understand this has been done. Remember when they weren't protesting, but you remember they were being controlled by the chicken. Whatever was in the chicken. You already think this has been done.
But here's the thing. But I get it. It's not the first time it's been done. Shout out to They Clone Tyrone. I'm looking for a fucking sequel soon. All right.
But
this is what I'll say. I'll say, don't beat around the bush of the idea that chicken controls niggas. Because this is what the bottom line of these commercials is. Don't beat around the bush of the fact that chicken controls us. Just come right out and say that niggas are under chicken control. We sing for the chicken. We dance for the chicken. The chicken makes us fail at Jenga. Ray Sherman is in the chicken. Don't beat around the bush. Just fucking talk to us and tell us that we're controlled by the chicken. Anyway, what'd you do this weekend?
I went to Stagecoach. First time ever. It was a lot of fun. I had a really good time.
Mm-hmm. Hawats.
Yes, but not that there were a lot of black people there, because there weren't. But I saw a black artist, and that was really cool. I finally met Compton Cowboys. We talked about him on this podcast.
Randy Savage.
Got to see him perform.
Randy Savage.
They had a whole installation. They told me they've been doing it for 3 years, so they had the horses out. They had a DJ. They were doing interviews. I got some merch. I'm wearing my Compton Cowboys shirt right now with the horses. It was really cool. Really cool to see them do their thing. Saw Willie Jones. Mm-hmm. Fan of him. We're going to have him on this podcast as well. Seeing Culture Country. I saw Shaboozy. I saw Brittany Spencer.
I like Shaboozy.
Yeah.
Have you ever Shaboozy song Tipsy?
Yeah, I heard it a lot this weekend.
I love that record.
I heard it a lot.
You know what? People are coming at Shaboozy, though, because Shaboozy's Nigerian. And they're saying that
it's a conversation I had.
So they're saying that the black country roots that we're taking back, that Shaboozy is cosplaying. That he's like... That's what they say.
He's not a Nigerian descendant. Where is he from?
He's from Houston.
He's from Houston.
People are saying that this black country thing is only for the black Americans. We have to have a conversation about the because, you know, black Americans, we share a lot. We have to have a conversation about whether or not this serves anything. A serious conversation. I want to do a whole, just like we did some of the sexist. I want to do a whole black American diaspora conversation, whether or not this actually serves anything, because it's like, I'm getting into Shaboozy and I'm listening to the song, and then I got people hit me up like, yo, Van, that's not a black American, these country roots that we talking about.
So we're gatekeeping?
Gates are meant to be keep. The question is, who are you supposed to keep them from?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, if you don't have a gate, a gate doesn't make sense if you're not paying attention to who you're letting in. You might as well not have the gate. I don't understand the term gatekeeping. You might as well not have a gate, right?
When you have a
cultural gate, everyone gatekeeps their culture. The question is, which culture is shared and for what reason, and which culture are we just being divisive for no reason when we're talking about it? I think that's a fair question.
Agreed. It is a fair question. But I really want to tap into it when it comes to a Shaboozy doing country music. That's my question. Are we supposed to be gatekeeping that? I don't know. We got to have these folks on to talk about it. I will tell you this.
I'm not going to stop listening to that record. That record is crazy. Shaboozy then tapped into something. Shaboozy is the man.
I will say this. At Stagecoach, everybody thought Beyonce was coming, myself included. The Cowboy Carter flag was flying over every show. There was trucks with Cowboy Carter all over them. She allegedly was there, but everybody thought she would come out on stage, right? Got to see Willie Nelson. Incredible to see a legend like that. They thought she might come out with Willie Nelson. Post Malone thought they were, she was going to come out on stage. Didn't. A lot of artists that were on the album, Cowboy Carter, were there performing. And I really feel like this was a lost opportunity for Beyonce to be able to do something to bring even more light to these emerging or already established Black country musicians.
Can I be real with you?
Mm-hmm.
Am I crazy for thinking that Beyonce is already over the country thing?
No, you're not. Like, she's probably already working on Act 3.
Yeah. Beyonce came in, stuck her foot in country music. I feel like Beyonce already over it, man. Beyonce ain't trying to come to a goddamn Stagecoach. It's hot out there. Like, I feel like she did it. It came out. I think people thought it was going to be whack. It wasn't. She proved it. And now I feel like Beyonce on to the next thing. I haven't even she ain't even been doubling down on this country shit.
This is the only thing I would say on that. I think, yes, I don't think she's taking this on tour. I thought she would come to
a lot of Stagecoach talk, by the way. Just let you know. It's a lot of talk about Stagecoach here. Okay. Just let you know, this is a lot of Stagecoach talk.
Okay, you only, because you weren't there. That's why you don't want to talk about it. This is the last thing I'm going to say about this. The only pushback I'm going to give to that is a lot of her marketing for this was bringing a voice and a light to artists that have been doing this for a while because she can, because she's Beyonce. And so to go hand in hand with that, it would have made sense to continue to do that, especially because so many of them, Tanner Adele, I saw her rolling around. So many people on the album were there. Just a lost opportunity, in my opinion.
Yes, could be. Look, we got to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Did you watch it?
Oh, so enough about Stagecoach. Let's move on to because you were doing commentary. No, I didn't watch it. I was in Stagecoach. Can I ask you a question? Do you normally watch the White House Correspondents' Dinner, or is it because you were working for CNN this weekend?
No, I watch it. I normally watch it.
No, you don't.
I do. Yeah, I watch what happens. I want to see because it's a relevant political thing. It's kind of like the All-Star Weekend of politics. You know what? Fuck it. We don't have to talk about it. But let me tell you something right now.
It's not a political thing. It's supposed to be bipartisan.
We don't have very many topics, okay? It's not been great. But let me tell you this. We don't have to talk about the whole White House Correspondents' Dinner. That's what I was doing this weekend. I was in D.C. I'll say this. I found a new artist that I like, and then we can get into some other stuff that we want to discuss. I found a new artist that I like, okay?
Who?
You ever heard of J.P.? Josh Gilley?
No.
You ever heard this record? Hold on for a second. You ever heard Bad Bitty?
No. I can't hear a thing. I can't hear anything. We can't hear.
That's enough. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner on the other side of this. Take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Lucasfilm and Disney Plus, presenting an all-new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. Stream the 2-episode premiere June 4th and witness an investigation into a shocking crime spree where secrets will emerge and no one is safe from the truth. The Acolyte, 2-episode premiere, streaming June 4th only on Disney Plus. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on, I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car? Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
Okay, so Colin Yost was the host of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And let me tell you why I think it's relevant to talk about it this year, if we haven't talked about it before. First of all, I was covering the White House Correspondents' Dinner for CNN. It was me and an esteemed panel that included Kerry Champion and Van Jones.
That is a great panel. So you were doing commentary as it was going on? Is this something new?
What are you talking about?
I'm the panel that you were on, like y'all were watching it and commenting on it.
So yeah, I was there from I was there from 7 to midnight.
Talking about the Correspondents' Dinner. Okay.
But not just the Correspondents' Dinner. We were talking about other topics, relevant topics. We were talking about Kristi Noem and the shooting of the dog. Have you heard about this?
Of course I did.
What are your thoughts about this? Let's discuss this. Let's discuss South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem and her. We also have Tamika Catchings on the show. I'll let you guys know. It's coming up a little bit later. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, in a book, revealed that she shot her dog Cricket because Cricket was both a poor hunting dog. And Cricket was also a dog that attacked a neighbor's chicken. She couldn't get through to Cricket. Cricket was 14 months old, so she had to put that chopper on Cricket. Rest in peace, Cricket. She divulged all of this in a book in great detail. And then she talked about the fact that her daughter walked out, her kid walked out and said, "Where's Cricket, Mommy?" It was one of the most bizarre stories I've ever seen a political figure tell. I have no idea why you would tell a story like that. When you saw her divulge this, what did you think?
Well, allegedly there was a goat she killed as well.
She went on a fucking rampage. She killed a dog, a goat, and she's also said that she's killed a couple of horses since.
Okay.
This motherfucker is going nuts. She's out here. She's the fucking Richard Ramirez, Night Stalker of animals. She's the son of Sam. She's the son of ASPCA, Kristi Noem. I don't understand. She's an animal killing son of a... Go ahead.
Well, this all came out because she's writing a book, and like I think it was The Guardian that got
some excerpts.
An advance. Yeah. So I don't. To answer your question, I don't know why she would write this. We don't know what the rest of the chapter or the book says. Obviously, there's no justification for going around and shooting animals because you think they can't be trained or because you think that they are mean or nasty, which is some of the words that she used. She could have taken the animal to a trainer. She could have rehomed the animal. There are things that she could have done. A lot of things other than just shooting them to get rid of the problem. This is disgusting. This speaks to her character. And I hope people are outraged. It'll be interesting to see I'm curious as to how y'all discussed it when you were on the panel, but it'll be interesting to see the response that people have in light of other public situations with public figures situations with public figures and how they dealt with dogs. Because she is also someone who, you're making a face.
Talking about Vic?
Of course. The way that was discussed and handled, I'm curious as to how people are going to do this. Because she is somebody who they're also saying could be a running mate with Trump.
Yeah, that's out. I think the dog killing situation has destroyed that. I just wonder why you would say something like this. We'll talk about the Correspondents' Dinner in a second. I think the Vic thing is interesting. What?
What do you mean why I would say something like this? Go ahead.
It's always like, I felt, when this came out, I felt bad for Vic.
And you should.
Because let me tell you something. That nigga Vic was crazy, man. When you read that tweet, like what he rehabilitated himself in the world of dogginess, and he did what he had to do, you know, to come back. But yeah, that nigga, that was some brutal shit going on over there at Bad News Kennels. But like just the bringing up of Vic, is I knew that it was going to happen because everybody, like, they jumped on Vic and it was all of this stuff. It's like, whatever. In this situation, I think, and I don't want to read too much into this and go too deep. So, but I have to be real. This sort of brutal Darwinism is kind of how I view the right. So think about this. You have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog is essentially a pup. 14 months. I remember when my very own Bozerly Wozerly was 14 months. He was still running around. I mean, he's still kind of running around now. He was still running around, going nuts, doing the whole thing. But if you value the dog, if you value the life of the dog,
the life of it,
if
yes.
you value what the dog can become, then you know what you do? You invest into the dog. You invest time into the dog. You invest patience into the dog. You invest compassion into the dog. The dog ate your shoe. The dog chewed on the side of the thing. If there's a belief in what the dog could be, which is someone that adds to your family, which is something that has its own sanctity of life because it is a living being. It deserves to be here because it is here. Then you take the time to invest into the dog and build the dog up. You understand, dogs don't get it sometimes right away. They come from different mm-hmm. types of situations. And you also understand that if the dog is poorly trained, it could be your fault. It could be the environment that you created for the dog. That doesn't have enough structure, that sure. doesn't have enough balance, that doesn't have enough reward for the dog. To me, there's a certain school of politics and cultural theory that says people and things are things that you invest into, things that you forgive mistakes for, things that you rehabilitate, and you honor the life and the entire life of someone by showing that. By schooling, by all of that. And then there is another part of it that represents this, like I said, brutal allegiance to social Darwinism that just says anything that's not acting the way you want it to, you just eliminate it. Because there's something better behind it. There is a dog that would get it. There is a person that would get it. So kill him or throw him in jail. And just elevate the next thing. Forget about the life right there. And I'm sorry, this is the way I think a lot of these people on the right are. I think a lot of them believe that people are born bad, that some of them are untrainable, that some of them are unredeemable, that some of them are the drudges of society, and that we do society a favor and they do themselves a favor when they eliminate those people or those dogs or whatever they are and just move on to the next thing that is good. And it's a hard choice, but it's a choice of leadership. And that's what she said. So when I see that, when I see someone do something like that, I think, who are the people that are being elevated that don't have the patience for leadership, that don't have the compassion for leadership, that don't have the empathy for leadership? And I see that so much, but it's a stat for some people that you can be hard, crushing, that you'll smash people under your boot. The moment I saw that, the dog killer in her, I thought, oh, there's a Republican. Mm-hmm. I'm just being for real. I don't like to get into the whole politics of it and cast
MAGA
people in these
or
roles
Republican.
As much. A MAGA Republican. But at the same time, I don't want to absolve the Republican Party from the coarse and cynical way that they typically deal with with American citizens and have dealt with them for a while now. There, remember, compassionate conservatism was a thing.
Yeah.
Because the understanding was that conservatism wasn't compassionate. Oh, I'm a compassionate conservative. Well, why should compassion be a stat? So when I saw her, I'm like, oh, makes a lot of sense. You know, I get that. I come from a long line of hunters, a long line of outdoorsmen. I don't hunt anymore, haven't hunted for a long time. I'm obsessed with animals. I'm going to be a vegetarian one day. I can already tell you right now. I'm getting to the point to where it's harder to me. It's harder for me to eat animals.
I don't believe that. I don't believe
love
that.
Animals. Love animals. I saw a video of a woman in a fight with a chicken. Mm-hmm. And I felt so bad for the chicken. This video has been going viral. This woman, the chicken attacked her.
Don't watch that.
And then her get back on the chicken, to me, was draconian. She put them fucking hands on this chicken.
The chicken attacked her, though?
Yeah, but the chicken got off on her, right? So when we're talking about this, we have to discuss what appropriate responses are. So I'm going to describe the video for you.
Okay.
So the chicken, she's walking through like a factory or something. I don't know where they are. They're in some other country. I could tell it's not America, though. And the chicken is kind of like, yo, what's up? And it pecks her. The chicken pecks her. The chicken gets off on her first. No bullshit. The chicken starts it. And then she turns around and she looks at the chicken. She's like, yo, who the fuck you think you fucking with? And she takes her hand and she slaps the chicken. And okay. Then she slaps the chicken again. And right then, in my mind, the chicken's mind is right. The chicken, right. The chicken's like, oh, I fucked up. This is somebody that's not afraid of me. Because normally, I feel like this chicken, when he pecks somebody, or she, well, that's definitely a he, because I think it's a rooster. When he pecks somebody, normally they freak out and they run. Not this motherfucker. This motherfucker was ready for chicken drama. Okay. Peck the chicken, slap the chicken twice, pick the chicken up.
Wrung his
whirled
neck.
Whirled the chicken around, threw the chicken, kicked the chicken. And then there's another video of this person with a shovel smacking the shit out of the chicken, and I felt like it went too far.
That's too far. Yeah, I think we can all agree that the moment she started taking it up and twirling it around, we had gone too far.
Yeah, I want to find her, this chicken assaulting woman, and I want to put her in the ring with somebody who can give her a little business. I want another animal to get the chicken's get back. Okay? A bird. I want another bird to take up for the chicken.
Let's move on. Let's move on.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Back to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Mm-hmm. You wanted to talk about it. Did you enjoy it? What did you? Well, I guess you watch it every year. So, I went last year. I thought it was a cool experience.
You went last year?
Yes, you know this. I talked about this.
Look, hold on. See, this is my issue with you. If you've actually been to the shit, why is it such? If you've been to it, why is it such a big deal that me, someone who's interested in political theater, not politics as much as I am in political theater? Why is it so hard to believe that I would watch the White House Correspondents' Dinner annually?
I just didn't find it. It's a cool experience to go to. You know, they call it nerd prom. You see everybody from sports figures to actors to reality TV to politicians. Like, you know, I saw some of my favorite people I love to watch. It was a cool experience. But to sit and I didn't know that people sit and commentate on it and analyze what's going on. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know if it's that interesting. That's more of what I thought.
Interesting enough for you to fly all the way to DC and get all dressed up, whatever. It's like, that's classic Rach, right?
It was an experience. It was a cool experience.
So this is what I would say. Okay, so number one, I'll say something. I said this on CNN and shout out to CNN for having me out there. The flight back was the worst experience of my life. I have to say something right now. Not the worst experience of my life. I've been through Hurricane Katrina, but I have to say something right now. I found the worst airport in America.
Reagan? Dulles?
Dulles. Dulles is the worst airport I've ever been to. It is by far Dulles is terrible. I want to hear from everybody. What's the worst airport you've ever been to? Dulles, to me, I'm talking about, I've been to little small airports all over the place. Dulles, to me, is the worst airport ever. It's the worst. It's terrible. So I hated it. I'm sure you loved it. But look, here's the thing. Here's the thing about the White House Correspondents' Dinner this year. It was decidedly high leverage to me. And I'll tell you why. Normally this is, like I said, it's the all-star weekend. Everybody gets together. It's a party event. But now anytime the president speaks there, it's a referendum on his energy, his mental acuity, and what he's able to message, right? Because you know, they're in a dead heat. CNN poll came out today that has Trump up 6 points over Joe Biden. Things have been tightening, as of late, but that was a little bit of a surprise to me this morning. Depends on which poll you're talking about, but still, obviously Trump is edging Joe Biden right now. In the grand scheme of things, most people have it tied. If you go to like a lot of the 538 stuff or some of the other stuff, it's pretty much tied. And one of the reasons why it would be that way is because of what people believe about the mental acuity and the energy and the stamina of Joe Biden. So whenever the president talks about where it is, if it's an interview or if it's a White House Correspondents' Dinner, it's sort of going to be a referendum on his mental state and whether or not he can lead the country in the next 4 years. That's going to be the biggest thing that people are going to criticize him about, besides the border and a couple of other things. So I thought he was awesome in that respect, Joe Biden. I thought he took it to Trump. This is around the same time that he was on Howard Stern and said that he would debate Trump, which I think he should. I thought he was awesome. I thought he was funny. I thought he was self-deprecating. I thought that he showed a little bit of chutzpah, if you will. I thought Colin Jost was good.
I saw a lot of criticism for him.
I thought it was good. A lot of criticism for him. He came out to a full-blown endorsement of Joe Biden at the end. He said that his grandfather voted for Joe Biden before he passed away. And he did that because he thought that Joe Biden was a decent man. Tell you what I didn't see at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, of all the jokes that were made. And these are supposed to be the most biting political critiques that one could get. There was no talk about what's going on in Gaza. There was very little acknowledgement of the protest that was outside of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. They didn't touch on it. They didn't discuss it. It wasn't brought up. So much so that it slipped my mind to address it or bring it up when I was on the panel. That was, of all the things that Joe Biden is being criticized about that were talked about at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the one thing that he's being criticized about more than anything right now that wasn't brought up in jest or in any serious way, was the fact that young people all over the country are protesting what they believe to be a genocide happening in Gaza right now. And another thing was this. And I'd have to go back and watch again with a fine-tooth comb. But the White House Correspondents' Dinner is a celebration of a free press. It's a celebration of journalists that go to hotspots all over the world and put their safety in danger and put themselves in harm's way in order to bring people the truth and to bring people stories that they feel like they have to see, need to see and have to see. And when you have as many journalists that have been harmed and killed in this present war as have been killed, some believe recklessly and violently, and some believe intentionally, the fact that the safety of journalists covering stories all over the world, and particularly in hot zones like Gaza, that there wasn't an affirmation from anyone about how we should protect journalists, the access that journalists deserve, and how we care about the safety of journalists in spots like that, that wasn't raised. I thought that was interesting and a missed opportunity for people who are supposed to be celebrating journalism and celebrating the sanctity of the First Amendment and the right of people to know what's going on in different places.
Interesting. Interesting to the last part of what you said in discussing the free press and bringing acknowledgement to the sacrifice that journalists make. Because when I went, there was a lot of talk, and I think this is interesting, about the Ukraine war. But that when it comes to this one, they don't. The whole thing was about that. And it was actually very emotional. As they, you know, were showing clips and then, you know, when they were honoring certain journalists and they were showing the work that they've done and what they've reported, like I learned a lot. And so it's so interesting the way they're handling this one, not surprising, but interesting because I didn't watch this year, but compared to what they did last year. Now I have a question for you with the protests, and I don't know if, as you guys were commentating, they were showing, did they show outside what it looks like going in? Because I know they show the carpet, which is very chaotic.
Maybe once the panel that I was on, and just to be fair, was more the job was to commentate on what was happening during the actual White House Correspondents' Dinner. That's what it was sort of about commentating on that, like it was a football game or whatever. I think the only political topic that we got into outside of that was the dog killing cut Christy Noem.
Okay. I only say it because it's a very chaotic scene outside. And there usually is some form of protest. But, you know, this one was bigger. You had people that were lying in the street. Bringing awareness to what's going on. And so I was curious if part of the reason you didn't talk about it is because they didn't show any of it, but you just explained, you know, how you guys were, or what was shown for you guys to talk about. But my question to you is, why are you said they didn't bring it up. They didn't talk about, what's going on. Are you shocked by that? Because to me, no. I am by no means would I expect Biden to get up there and bring any awareness or discussion about the war.
Yeah, I'm not shocked. But, you know, we have our own platform. And even though we struggle to get it right or not struggle to get it right, we struggle to be enough for anyone. It's important to not be blinded by the fact that at college campuses, We are dangerously close, in my opinion, to letting. No, we're not dangerously close to anything. We're there. So this particular issue it echoes to me so much through other issues that we've had. Let me tell you what I mean by that. The First Amendment, student protest. I'll reorganize one more time intellectually. There's a belief. And the belief is whoever you like can get away with whatever they want. Whoever you like can get away with whatever they want. Believe it or not, people struggle with that. all the time. Everyone, whoever you are listening to this right now, you struggle with it. You struggle with, quote unquote, what your fave does. You struggle with it. It's more difficult to toss something that you've invested in. It's the same reason why people stay in bad businesses, why people stay in bad relationships, why people stay at bad jobs. Like, you hear women all the time say, hey, I wasted this much time with someone. You hear men say, I wasted this much time with someone. If you've been there for a month, you want equity for that month. If you've been there for a year, you want equity for that year. You want it to have meant something. And the moment that you cut and run from it, you feel like you've wasted that time, and that time has been gone. That same thing exists in social relationships and parasocial relationships, and it also exists in political relationships, but it also exists conceptually. Like, conceptually, what does it mean when your fave does something that you disagree with, right? And in this particular situation, Israel is the fave of America. Zionism is the fave of America. It is. It's been a long-standing relationship that's been geopolitically advantageous to America for a very long time. And so things that are central to the American experience and understanding, one being protest, are now coming under fire. We're asking if that's okay to do that. We're asking what the limits of protest are. We're asking how protest should be done and what you need to do and all of that stuff. And this happens, right? The Republicans are free speech absolutists until Colin Kaepernick protests the flag. Until he uses his free speech to protest the flag. And then after he uses that, it's canceling him, taking stuff away, whatever happens to him, he deserves. And so I say all that to say that, like, as tepid as people feel like my response to this has been, my principle on what people are allowed to say, how they're allowed to say it, and particularly young people who have the advantage of being able to be hyper-focused on a cause, the strength of that shouldn't be ignored. It shouldn't be ignored on CNN. It should be ignored on MSNBC. It shouldn't be ignored by us. What's happening very now is very important. And there are all kinds of questions that should be asked. There are all kinds of distinctions that should be made. But the reality is, you have a group of people out there who are trying to change and shape their world. And look, I talk about young people all the time. The young people out there that feel like they're going to change the world to where they don't have to come into the office. I don't think you're going to do that, but Godspeed. Like, the ones that think that they're going to get a 4-day work week with 6-day hours in nap chambers. I don't think that's going to happen. But
nap chambers.
I don't think that's going to happen, but Godspeed. And in this particular situation, I think the most belittling thing that you can do to these young people is to ignore them or to cast them as villains. And a lot of the mainstream media is attempting to do both. Even if in spots you could say that they're wrongheaded. Real quick, last thing I'll say about this. After 9/11, there was a group of Black students that got together at Southern to talk about it. Right? Everybody was scared. It's very scared. I was 21 when 9/11 happened. So I'm right in the throes of, will I get the opportunity to have an adulthood, or is World War III coming? These existential crises happen to almost every generation, and that was mine, right? Maybe in the 80s, it was whatever, the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s, whatever, the 70s were full of strife, hyperinflation and gas crises and all that stuff, whatever, crime through the roof. I remember I was sitting down one time, and we're students, we're kids, right? Young adults. And one of my homeboys, who was one of the smartest of us, we were talking about the actual hit on the World Trade Center, right? And one of my homeboys says, there are really no innocent people inside the building. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, every single person in that building is an instrument of American capitalism. So the building itself was a grotesque museum of the domination and exploitation of Western power around the world. I remember I thought to myself, I was like, this is a smart guy. This is a guy who had already seeded that he was seeded my intellectual superiority. So I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I was like, so just the black lady that worked there, and she worked in the World Trade Center, and I don't know, she don't have to be, let's not make her a janitor or whatever, let's make her a receptionist. She answer phones at whatever joint. She go in there and somebody ran a plane into her, and that's dope. And what I realized is that two things happen at the same time a lot of times on college campuses. One, you have young adults on college campuses that have this fierce truth of this intellectual virtue. They're learning all of these things and they're seeing the world, and they don't have families yet, and they don't have bills to pay yet. So they can spend all day on an issue. They're oftentimes so righteous in spirit on something that it's inspirational. And at the same time, what they don't have is a full grasp on the real world and an actual victim and what it means to have to sacrifice, not saying all of them, for family, or sacrifice for your family, or to make a decision to go be someplace or work someplace that you don't want to, of how capitalism shrinks your brain. It hasn't happened to them yet, which is why their protest is both so important to me and why it's also important to be patient with them, to be open to the ways in which they get it wrong. Now, by and large, the protests on these college campuses are not as the media is portraying them.
Sure.
They're not. By and large, like when I tell you by and large, there's been a media spin on what's happening all over the place that to me is clearly pro-Zionist, right? Where it isn't, I would say there is some stuff that's going on that's deeply, deeply disturbing, right? Deeply disturbing. However, what I would say to that, and I say this all the time, I'm consistent here. I know I'm droning on, and I apologize to the audience. I apologize to you, Rachel. But I've said this before. When someone comes out and they have all of this, and they have these tweets from back in the day, and they have all of this stuff, what have I said before? I'm like, I get it, but also remember, this is a kid. This is a young person.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone that you have to have a little empathy and compassion to. And sometimes you have to understand energy and intent when you're looking at this. So, you know, all over the place when they're talking about that these students are Hamas and these students are terrorists and these students are, they want the death and destruction of their Jewish classmates. No, I don't believe that to be true at all. I believe that sometimes when they're as on fire as they are right now, that they don't have the capacity or the desire to think about how some things might make people around them feel. And as much as we have to be critical of that part of it, we also have to understand that a lot of these people are learning how to live in a world that doesn't make sense to them because of the way their minds are informing them. So I think that my goal, and I think other people's goals as being older people, should be to be the connective tissue between safety, activism, a very needed radicalism, and an understanding of how to exist as a good human citizen. And I think most people would rather just say terrorist, 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 or freedom fighter, freedom fighter, freedom fighter. I think these kids are, the last thing I'll say, I think a lot of the young adults here, I want to call them kids, a lot of the young adults here, I think they're, I agree with their protest. I agree with the way that they're comporting their protest. I think that they are doing enough. I see a lot of, I see a lot of them reaching out to students that might feel unsafe or whatever. But even in their righteousness, it's always important to think about how what you do makes somebody feel. That's the lesson that I've learned being an older man. The lesson I've learned being an older man is, part of being a citizen and being in a society is juggling what you're going to do to get to what you're to your goal and your end, and how what toll that takes on somebody else. And when you're doing that equation, most of the time, it's fuck how they feel. It is, and it has to be. But it's not like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best I can do. What are your
thoughts? Well said. You said it all. It was very well said. I agree with everything you said. And you don't have to apologize for going on when you're making your point. And you're passionate about your point. And I think a lot of people needed to hear that, self included. So, well said.
Also, we're going to get off this now. But I have a surprise topic I want to spring on you. We're going to bring Tamika Catchings on. But I have a surprise topic I want to spring on you. I have a list here.
Of surprise topics? Wait, what does that say?
It says playbook requirements.
Okay, so listen.
No. This is going to be our first playbook coaching session, real quick, with Rachel. We have Tamika Catchings coming on right after this. But all right, Rachel, these are playbook requirements, and I want to know, like, what they are. Okay, so I have three categories for playbook requirements. One is physical. These are for you to tell me. One are the physical requirements, okay? Because I'm getting deep into the playbook. It's almost May. Two are the life requirements for the playbook. Okay? Life requirements. And the third are what I like to call the intangibles. Why should I be on the lookout intangible-wise? Okay? Okay.
Okay.
Rachel, physical requirements, playbook-wise. Let's go. I'm writing this down.
I don't really have... I mean, I need to be attracted to you, but I'm not going to sit here and say, you got to be this height. I literally talk about this in my book of essays. I'm no longer doing that. You got to be this height. You got to, you know, like, your body's got to look like this. The only physical requirement is, at the moment, I've come home. Okay.
So black. So preferably. You want a black man. Preferably black. Okay. So when you say preferably.
But if I'm like swept off my feet by something else, by like for example, even no.
Your white slide.
No. Let me explain something. I don't want to because I talk about this in my book. I don't want to count myself out, right? I literally say, if you have a list, throw it out. But what I will say is, even on when it came to The Bachelor, it wasn't something that I was looking for. I was like, okay, this took me by surprise. I have to be taken by surprise to stray away from the list. But at the moment, I'm home.
You coming home? Okay, so. Would you say this is an 80% requirement that he's black? Or 90?
Maybe higher.
Okay, so that's 90. So 90%. Okay, so black. So give me a spectrum of attractiveness. Or we're talking about, let's say
I don't want a pretty boy.
No pretty boy. See, we're getting somewhere. No pretty boys. Ashley, make sure we keep all these bullet points down. No pretty boys. Thank you very much. Ashley's doing a fantastic job. So no pretty boys. Okay. Is there any other no's?
And also pretty boy, that doesn't mean attractive. Pretty boy is a mentality, right? So like it's
pretty boy
it's
mentality.
It's a mentality. I don't want that.
I'm gonna put that down for physical and for intangibles. No pretty boys. We all know what you're talking about, by the way. We know exactly what you mean. So anybody that's like, what does she mean, pretty boy? What does she, you know who the pretty boys are. You fucking know. Okay. All right, no pretty boys, whatever. Anything else physically? Because listen, I want to let you know.
You have to be taller than me. You have to be taller than me.
Taller than Rachel. And Rachel is 5 foot six?
With heels.
So what are you in life? 5 foot five?
I'm five four.
You're 5'4"? Really? You're 5'4".
Yeah.
Okay. You project taller. I was about to say like 5'8". Yeah.
Thank you.
So no one shorter than 5 foot five, which
No, with heels. So nobody shorter than 5'10".
Nobody shorter than 5'10"?
Yeah.
No one shorter than 5'10". So one of my homeboys, you're out.
No, wait. Is he, what is he? 5'8"? 5'9"?
He's out. Okay? I'll tell you what he is. Is out. Good guy.
But no, I told you. See, I don't like that.
He's out. The good guy, I told him he was out already.
Come back.
I told him he was out already. Told him he was out already. He's very rich, by the way.
See, extremely wealthy. I like that.
But he's extremely wealthy.
I hate the light thing.
5'8". Okay, we'll bring it down to 5'8". So he's back in. All right. Ashley, keep
because I'm 5'8" with heels. Also, and I don't know, this is the physical. I need to be able to have a conversation with you. Like we need to be, I'm not a sapiosexual. Okay. But I need, like, I want to have conversations with you where you observe things about life. Like I want to go deep with you. I don't want to just talk about particular situations. I want us to have deeper conversations. That's important to me.
You're not sapiosexual.
I wouldn't define myself that way.
I will put down here at the bottom, will fuck dumb niggas.
Okay. Again. Yeah. That is enough.
No. You made it clear. Okay. So one of my homeboys, you're back in. I told him that he was far too stupid for Rachel. and he knows a lot about his sport, but I told him that he was far too stupid for Rachel. And he was upset, but you're back in.
I think anybody would be upset that you said that. I want to be able to laugh with you. You ain't got to be the funniest person. Funny. You don't have to be the funniest person in the room. I do not need you to be a comedian. And I can be a little corny, so that saves you too. But I just like want to be able to enjoy each other. You know how you go to restaurants and you see those couples who are just sitting there? They have nothing. They're not talking. They're just looking at their food, looking at the restaurant. That is my worst fear. We need to be able to enjoy each other's company. That's
enjoy. Okay. Funny plus enjoyable. I would say charismatic right there.
Charismatic might be the word.
Charismatic is some charisma.
You don't need to be the life of the party because I can do that, but you gotta be charismatic.
Okay. So is there anything else physical? Shoulders? Are you into thighs? Or like what if he had like real tiny feet or tiny hands? What if he had tiny hands? Can a nigga with tiny hands get it done?
No. I'm not married to that. I'm not married to that. I'm not even married. You don't have to have because I think people are going to look at my ex and think that's exactly what I want. But I've talked about this in the podcast. You know, like, I don't need the person with the abs. That's not a requirement for me.
Abs? Okay.
Don't have to have them.
Dad bod? Are dad bods okay?
That's fine.
Wow. Okay. Boy, I tell you what. There's a couple of people that are in that didn't think they were in. This is very fun. Dad bods. Okay.
I'm not right. So, I want you to be like, you need to be concerned about, you know, like your health, but you don't have to be walking around here looking like a Greek god.
Somebody to eat pork with. Okay, cool.
Love that.
All right. Real quick. Let's go back to life requirements. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about money. Got to talk about it. I don't want to put a number on it because
you have to make, you don't have to make more than me.
Okay.
But you got to make money.
Got to make money. Okay. How about this? I have a theory about this. I have a saying. You want to see it?
Okay, yes.
Got to make money. I think putting amount of money on what someone has to make for love is cynical. I have a theory. The theory is the I got you theory.
I love that. I'm in a business that fluctuates. So I need to know if it's a downtime for me, you got me. That is a perfect way to put it.
I got you. Like if it's like, cause you know, we up, we down. If we down, I got you. That's all it. It has to be a got you situation.
Yes.
And I'm sure you have no problem being the I got you on the other side. It's a relationship, right?
Of course.
You don't want an extended period of I got you. I got you can't last like, you know, 10 years, 5-6 years. But the I got you is what you're talking about. So that's the level of security that you want. I think you've said this before as well.
I need physical, security. Financial, and safety. I need to feel those things. I also need you to be ambitious.
Ambition.
Okay? I don't want a dreamer. I want somebody who's ambitious.
Well, you want a dreamer, but you want a doer as well. You don't want somebody that's, you know, Tevin Campbell.
Just want somebody
comes from dreaming but dreams. Oh, sitting around a little while everyone else is down the street. Nothing comes from talking us but sound.
But talk. Oh, talk.
We talk, we want to, but the world still goes around and round.
Round and round.
Okay. All right. Let's see. All right. So let's just do a couple of things. Age. What's too old?
Anything older than 55. Actually, I might be able to go to 60.
60? Because I was about to say, I know 60-year-olds that you would date. We're going from bachelor to golden bachelor here.
Yeah.
60. What's too young?
Anything less than 35.
Okay. Now, I just want to let you know that a couple of my homies in the LNBA have reached out. Just listen.
Okay,
hold on. Wait. Because the playbook is getting serious. So a couple of my homies in the old LNBA have reached out. These guys are not 35. Okay. They're not 35. Okay.
Are they in their 30s?
One is.
Here's the thing. It's hard to say, like, I prefer an athlete that's on their way out.
Of the league. Okay.
If I'm going to do this, I prefer, because I told my homeboy who plays in the league, I was like 45 to 55. He was like, I'm absolutely not doing that. I'm not introducing you to anybody 45 to 55. Yeah. But I was like, I don't really know if I really want the team. It depends, right? You could be younger than me and have gone through what you've gone through and you're ready for something different. There's always an exception. But preferably.
30, okay, you know, I'm with it. I'm with it. 35.
I don't want to count anybody out. There's always an exception. Like, because here's the thing. Understand. You don't have to have. Let me say this about this list you're making, because this is already going too long. You don't have to have every one of these things. Right? Maybe if you have 3 out of 5, we good.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last question I'll ask you about it. And this is an important question. By the way, we have to have Michael Harriet on pretty soon. Me and Michael talked about it.
BBI.
No, we talked about Coleman Hughes' book. I want to have Michael Harriet on.
Okay.
Coleman Hughes' book. I'd almost want to facilitate a debate between Michael Harriet and Coleman Hughes. That might be fun. Are biracials okay?
Yes. That identify as Black. Why are you silent? Why are you pointing?
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, Rachel. That's my sister. That's my sister. That's my sister. So black biracials.
Can I say that you're getting me very excited?
The fuck you talking about, nigga? Calm down. What you talking? Whoa.
What I'm just saying. You're making a list. A you're taking this serious. Yeah. You're writing it down.
Yeah, I'm like, all of this stuff is getting written down. Because look, I don't know if it was. So Rachel, let me tell you something real quick. After the birthday party, the streets started talking. People liked the way you looked at the birthday party. The birthday party was apparently a good night for the playbook. Okay.
That was my goal. I was like, I wanted to stunt for my birthday.
It was a good night for the playbook. So I just want to let people know that I'm draconian with this. And just let you guys know something. To all my niggas out there. I've been knowing y'all. So just stop. No, it's not happening. I've been knowing y'all. I love y'all. No. Nigga, I know you. I know me. You know what I'm saying? I know me. And I know you. I know you. No. It's not happening. It's not going to be my fault. Like, you know what I'm saying? I know you. So just let it go. It's like, don't hit me up. Hit her up. Because if you hit her up and she with it, fine. But for some of y'all other ones, no way. Okay, it's out.
Now I'm curious.
No, I'm telling you, you're not.
No.
Some of these niggas, you got CTE. Okay, I know you. It's not going to happen. All right. Okay, so this is good. All right. So
you got something to work with? Good. Great.
I do. I have something to work with. There's one white guy that I'm going to throw into this.
Aw.
One white guy.
He must be great because for you to say, I'm going to throw him in.
He asked and I can't say no. I'm not in a position professionally. And I can't say no. So you'll.
Are we waiting till the summertime to get this activated?
No, it's May. May's the beginning.
May?
May's the beginning.
2 days from now.
Yeah, it's very, very important. I'm arranging these lists into a spreadsheet. Kalika and I will go over this. but yeah. Okay, good. On the other side of this break, Hall of Famer Tamika Catchings to talk about equity, equality, and the rise of the WNBA.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by DSW. Whenever I'm thinking about picking up a new pair of shoes, the first place I go to is DSW. Whether it's gearing up for a holiday, reinventing your style, or just finding a pair to stay comfy in while watching the game, DSW has all the brands you want at prices that just make sense. Shop now at your nearest DSW store or online at DSW.com.
All right, we have topics to talk about relating basketball, and when we're doing that, we have to talk to people who know what they're talking about. And we have a Hall of Famer in our midst. Legitimately, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. 15-year career, the Indiana Fever, the WNBA. Four-time Olympic gold medals. Four Olympic gold medals. I even know you could do that. One of the most decorated players ever. Rookie of the Year, all WNBA honors. We could get into her collegiate career with the University of Tennessee. It's just too much. You're too decorated, Tamika, for us to list out all your stuff. It would take up all the time we have in the interview. We have Tamika Catchings joining us on the show today. I mean, just an absolute gem. We're very honored to have you today. How are you doing? Thank you for joining us on Higher Learning.
I am great. I'm excited to be here with you guys. I don't know about, I saw that LSU back there and the back shoulder. That right there. So I kind of was like, wait a minute, what's going on? But we all family. It's all SEC. So we all
family. SEC family. I mean, you have no reason to have beef with us. We never got close to you guys, by the way. When you were playing, it was like a whooping every time. Like, anything, I should be mad at you. Before we get into what we're talking about, there's new news, the retirement of Candace Parker. What are your thoughts on the legacy that Candace has left to the game?
Man, that was yesterday was interesting, right? To wake up and to know, you know, obviously Pacers are in the playoff right now, so the hype around Indianapolis and Indiana is Pacers, and WNBA training camp started, and then all of a sudden, when everything seems smooth, we get that big announcement that Candace CP is retired. And, you know, honestly, I'm proud of her. What she's been able to do in from college, like going back to our Tennessee days, or her Tennessee days, I'm older than her, just what she's been able to do from that scene to what she's doing in the WNBA. But I even look at, like, all the stuff that she's doing off the court right now. And her family, and just like she just got so many amazing things going on. So it's sad, right? It's sad because you're losing a legend on the court and all that she brought to the game. But it's kind of what I said. You close one chapter and you start another chapter, and it's kind of been fun watching her because she's been at the end of one chapter on the basketball, on the court side, but opening other doors and, you know, all of the things that she's involved with. So I told her, I'm like, it's just the beginning. Like, you've already accomplished so much in that life. Mm. And now it's kind of, now you literally flip the page and start a new chapter. And what she's done so far on the court is nothing compared to what she's about to do.
That's fantastic. Mm. So let's get into it. It seems to be a really pivotal and transformational time for the WNBA. People say that, obviously, with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese coming into the league, both drafted in the first round. The insane popularity of the last two women's tournaments there, NCAA tournaments, and with the success of NIL and the marketing of the players, it seems like it's a different era in the WNBA, and it's about to begin. When people say that, do you feel that's being overstated, or do you agree?
I agree. I totally agree. You know, it's interesting because people will ask me questions about, like, what would you have done and how would you have done this? And the reality is, I don't know, because none of that, like, social media had just started kind of toward the end of our career and just like the advancement of that. Then you get to the pandemic. And I like to say, even from the women's standpoint, the game and how it transitioned, I will say that when Erika Ogunbowale hit those shots, Notre Dame, right before the pandemic, everybody's like, during the pandemic. So think about the WNBA. We have the wobble in Florida. Everybody's at home. You're tuned in. You're watching the game because what else do you have to do? Then you fast forward into, you know, the women's tournament. And I feel like every single year, there had been some aspect of something that had continued to kick off women's basketball and then even just women's sports in general. Now let's get to the last 2 years in women's basketball. Of course, LSU, Iowa last year, championship game in Texas. My mom and I were at that game. The environment was like, it was crazy. Add that to the NIL and you start seeing all the money trickling in for these players, for Caitlin and Angel and, you know, a lot of the other players having those opportunities that we didn't have. So, like, to even think about what would you have done past 10 to where we are present 10, you can't even imagine what that looks like. I know, and talking to Angel and just having those opportunities, you know, she has taken advantage of it. The Clark effect. We see it here. I'm in Indiana, so I see it everywhere I go. Like, I've never talked about the Indiana Fever as much as I have as far as the last couple of years because of what she is bringing, the new excitement, a rejuvenated sense of the Fever. Everybody is trying to get tickets. The cost of tickets has gone up. People are complaining, and I'm like, what did you expect would happen? Mm-hmm. Because this is great for our game. This is great for women's basketball. And as we continue to grow, all these young girls and boys that have now somebody else to aspire and look up to. Last year, we had the number one pick, Leah Boston, what she was able to do at South Carolina. So I just feel like we're in a pivotal time right now of seeing women's basketball and women's sports kind of turn that corner. And hopefully we'll start to see from the lucrative standpoint, from the financial standpoint, we'll start to see it become more lucrative.
I want to pick up on what you said about being more lucrative for the players. But first, as Van was announcing all of your amazing accomplishments, one thing you did not mention, Van, is that she is a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority,
right,
Incorporated. She is my soror. Another one. Van and I do. That is right.
Yeah. Let's go.
And from Texas. But I want to talk about what you were talking about it being more lucrative for the players. In addition to all the attention that is surrounding, you mentioned Kayla Clark, Angel Reese, South Carolina, all the attention that collegiate women's basketball is getting in professional. Now people, because there are all these new fans, which is fantastic, are really paying attention to the pay disparity. There was the picture that was going around that showed what Caitlin Clark was making her first year versus what the number one player drafted in the NBA was making.
Victor Wembanyama, yeah.
Yes. What do you think needs to be done to increase the pay for women playing professional basketball, professional sports? Where do you see it going? And do you think that this pay disparity can decrease in the future?
I mean, I definitely feel like the pay disparity can decrease. Like, I feel like the women, where we started to where we are today is a lot different. And so, you know, even, I mean, sometimes it's hard to compare the WNBA to the NBA because the NBA has been around for 50 plus years. You know, WNBA, we haven't been around for 50 plus years. We're almost at 30. So there's a difference in 20 years. However, I do feel
75
like...
75 years the NBA has been around.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm tripping, right?
1946,
Yeah, that's a long time. But when you try to compare the two leagues, it's hard to say, hey, we should be making X amount. Now, I set the foundation there, right? Because we've come a long way. Now you're looking at these numbers, but what can we do? Pay for the ticket, you know, like you're going to. Even we have fans here in Indiana that are complaining about the price of tickets because it definitely shot up. And, you know, Caitlin Clark, the effect of her being here in the city, and we saw it happen all last season. Every single city she went to, it was sold out arenas, right? So you're going to have to pay for tickets. Watch the game, which when you look at the viewership, our numbers were up. Way over the men number, but the amount of sponsorship and partnership dollars compared to from the NCAA for the women's game compared to the men is flipped, like it's upside down. So we got to figure out, but I think there's little things that we need to do. You're starting to see, and I mean, I don't know about me and Van, like you being the only male on this call, even during the NCAA tournament, I felt like there were more commercials with our female athletes, student athletes, like our ballers in them over the men. So being able to have those opportunities from partnership, being able to have the NIL, being able for people to watch the games and come to the games and support. I mean, that's how you generate more income. The reason NBA and even from the college sport, the reason that they are able to do what they do is because they have money just pouring in. We need those same dollars pouring into the women's side. So now we can take those dollars and we can put them in salaries. We can put them in opportunities and we can continue to increase, you know, viewership on TV and continue to give these young ladies the platform to perform.
You know, it's interesting. I think that for a long time, there was a thought that the women's game didn't have the capability to be as compelling for people as the men's game did. You'd listen to people talking, they would be like, oh, the guys are flying around and dunking, they're playing the game above the rim, and that's like inherently more watchable. that to me, that narrative started falling way before the last two Final Fours. The women's game has evolved and come so far and it's played at such a high level that I think that people that were watching it were like, this is a lot of fun to watch. We were talking about here on the podcast a couple of seasons ago. We decided we were going to watch the NBA, the WNBA. We're going to have a team. I went on YouTube TV and I favorited the team, was watching the games. It's a lot of fun to watch during the summer. I think the economic proof of concept, honestly, is something that not even I thought was possible.
Yeah.
With the fact that it's not even so much to me that everyone cared about the women's game. It was the disparity in care. Like the disparity in care between what the women's game was doing on college screens and what the men's game wasn't really doing was like shocking to me. It was like we could still be into the tournament, but just not the men's tournament. And I don't want to disparage the guys, but there are things there at work. There's the one and done situation there. You don't get to learn the players as much. There's the G League and some of the best guys going over there and all kinds of stuff. But I say all that to say, with people talking about the pay disparity between the WNBA and the NBA, when people make these situations, do you think it's a fair comparison, being that one league is so much more profitable than the other league? It's been around for so much longer. How do we have this conversation in a responsible way that identifies the economic realities while at the same time talking about what still could be done to support the women's game? So it doesn't become a culture war. It becomes how supported is the women's game in its current iteration?
Well, I mean, I think that you look at what are ways, just like any problem, right? When we are problem solving, we don't necessarily look at the problem. We look at solution. We look at ways that we can become part of the solution. And I think that's where you look at the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, is about to come due for the WNBA. So I can only imagine NECA Agumake is at the lead for the PA. So I can only imagine with her and the executive committee, what they're starting to talk about, what issues they're starting to bring up. I think Kathy Engelbert, our commissioner for the WNBA, is also looking for ways that the WNBA has to figure out a way to compete and how do you keep these players from having to go overseas and play basketball. So that's another. But the biggest part of all of this is the financial element, as we keep talking about. But I think the solution is more people, butts in the seat, like come to the game. Don't just come expecting a handout. Come and pay for tickets and sit in the seats and cheer. You know, I do think that, you know, to your point, Van, of what you brought up, being able to have those years in the college game and being able for people to follow you over the course of 4 years. I mean, whether you transfer or not, now you have all of these different teams that are watching, you know, or all these fans that are watching you as you're transferring from one team to another team. But that fan base follows you to the next level. You're not really seeing that as it used to be from the guy's side. So that's an area from the women's side that you are. I mean, Caitlin even said it. I expect all the Iowa fans to be in the stands. We are not far away from Iowa. You saw it with Aaliyah Boston. You saw it with Melissa Smith. And you can go on and on. You know, now everybody's with their social media platform being able to utilize it. And I think that's been one of the areas that I've loved watching our young ladies just use their platform. In the wobble, being able to fight for a cause, even though you're not here physically, but during the pandemic, you know, being able to, thinking about George Floyd and his murder and just what transpired from that, Black Lives Matter, and being able to step up, being able to use your platform. They use their voice even in the world. When we were far away, excluded, and are secluded in our own little space, they use their voice. And now you're seeing every single one of our players has their own platform. You know, let's give a shout out, Asia Wilson, Dear Black Girls, her new book that came out, you know, her platform, going on a bookstore. I think all of the interests that are coming even off the court are internally helping on the court too, because now you're reaching different audiences that are all pulling into the same pool of how do we support these women on the floor, but even realizing now, like, oh my gosh, these are amazing women. Even more amazing off the court and all the ventures that they're involved in.
You mentioned the CBA and that's they're about to start negotiating that. What are some issues? Because, you know, we like to bring these to our platform and then hopefully bringing awareness to these things like the pay disparity, make some changes or put some pressure on some folks. What are some of the issues? Like, I know travel is an issue, mm-hmm. players having to take commercial flights. What are some other issues that will be on the table when it comes to negotiating the CBA?
Well, that is probably the number one thing, right? Travel right now. I think that's the number one thing. Of course, the financial aspect and salaries and, you know, just the compensation overall. But, my mind just blinked too. Travel would be one, compensation two, but then even like, we have protected contracts. So even looking at that, you know, you've seen some of the players that have been protected and they tried to figure out there's a different pay scale for those players that are being protected and those players that are being cored, where you can't move to different players, and then the franchise players. So they looked at the pay scale. So I can imagine that might be on the table. I'm removed from those conversations. So to be able to kind of look, but I would say for me personally, looking from the outside in, travel is your number one, but then also, you know, commissioner talked about more team. Right now, the WNBA carries up to 12 players, but not every team has 12 players. A lot of teams only have 11 based on the salary cap. So I can imagine that either they fight for more spots or, you know, just looking at the expansion team, how are you going to handle the expansion? How do you handle it differently maybe than they have in the past? Mm.
Yes,
that's a good question, Rachel. Like that's a great question, because that is something that, you know, you'll start to see it probably in the next couple of months as, you know, the CBA comes out and the Players Association continues to get together. You'll start to hear about more about the issues that are coming up.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's probably a big TV deal coming pretty soon, like a really big one. The NBA got its first big TV deal, like $600 million in the early 90s, and that really changed the pay. So that'll be probably something that comes too. And then, you know, then the big thing will be the revenue split, like what the revenue sharing is. Like once that comes in, then you'll start to see, like, I know that the league has arrived when there's finally a WNBA strike. I'm not wishing.
We almost hit that. We don't want to go there. But you're right about the revenue share. There is an element in the CBA that has that. Right. We just have never hit it. So now with the new, the renegotiation of the television contracts, which, you know, that'll be huge. And that'll be one area. But you know how it is? Like when one thing happens, you start seeing other companies come on board. And I think that'll be, once that comes through, I'm going to put that into existence. Once that happens, then you'll see other companies start coming on board.
Mm. I have a little bit of a thorny question for you, Tamika. As Caitlin Clark has risen to become a legitimate sports phenomenon, she's had a foil in that, and that's LSU's very own Bayou Barbie, Angel Reese. Okay, we're talking national championship is what we're talking about, right? We did it for Pokey Chapman. and so as these two players have been exalted, or as they've overcome or broken through, you've seen them be at polar opposites. Do you see a difference in the way the media has covered Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark? A lot of people say that some of Angel Reese's competitiveness, some of her rough around the edgesness, some of her passion is covered one way, and some of Caitlin Clark's more rough around the edges, brash play, confident, bordering on arrogant play is covered in a different way, and people wonder why. You've watched a lot. Have you seen a difference in the coverage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see it. And I mean, you're bringing those two up, but you can kind of see it in years before. It is interesting, you know, but you kind of go back and, like, I don't know. the media sometimes, you know, they pick good versus bad, you know, and they get to pick the storyline that they want to pitch. Both of them are edgy. Both of them are fun to watch. Both of them are different, you know, from the color of their skin, of course, which, you know, like, you got to bring that out. But you don't always want to make this about a race thing. You know, and I don't want to say thing because I know it's a reality, but I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. It's definitely different. And, you know, what I'm thankful for, though, is that both of them have been allowed to excel on their levels to be able to receive the NIL, to be able to receive the platforms and the opportunity. You know, because either way it goes, you've got, no matter what your race, no matter what color is the color of your skin, when you go to the autograph line for either one of them, it's all types of people that are in the line waiting for autographs. You know, saw the other day the video of the little young boy that met Flage. You know, just like, he's crying in line. Like, that is real stuff, because for these young kids, these are stars in the making. These are the stars they're looking up to. And I do think, like, both of them are at this next level. You'll start to see a little bit of change, you know, different level, different people, maturity. And you know, college, it's like, look, you just out there walling out. And then you get to the next level and, you know, you're a professional. And especially if you get an opportunity to represent your country, that becomes another layer of professionalism that you just continue to mature.
Mm-hmm. We talk about the NIL opportunities that these new athletes have, which is fantastic. You did so much on the court. You did so much off the court. You continue to do so much off the court. Business owner, nonprofit. What advice do you have for these upcoming athletes? I mean, you already, and I mean, in women's sports, because you already talked about the activism of the WNBA players who really got it started before the NBA did. What advice do you have for them just using their platform and using like the NIL opportunities they have, which, you know, provides them a financial benefit that they're able to use that, you know, on and off the court?
I mean, I'd say first is be true to yourself, because there's a lot of people that are poor, a lot of companies that will come and will throw money at you. But if it doesn't fit your character and doesn't fit your brand and who you represent, don't take it just because of the money. So like, that would be my first thing, you know, like, be true to yourself. And then two, like, I tell all young people, every single thing you post is forever out there. No matter if you try to, you post it and try to delete it, it's still, somebody has seen it. And so really being conscious of who you are and what you represent and what, and that your voice carries weight. And sometimes, like, I give myself a 24-hour rule. If I get upset about something, I don't text, tweet, social, I don't do anything for 24 hours just to give myself a time. Like, is it really that serious? Did I get upset in the moment because of something that happened and, you know, things that I can't control? Or is it something that I really need to speak up about? And after 24 hours, if it's something that I really need to speak up about, I'm still going to speak my piece. And so really being conscious of that, because now, I mean, these young ladies, the platform that they have and the voice that they are, their voice carries so much weight that they almost have to be more careful than I was as a player, because now social media, I mean, everybody, I walk around and most people have their phone out and just scrolling all day, every day. So you just got to be conscious of that.
Tamiko, we know you got to go. We really appreciate you joining us on Higher Learning, though. It's an honor to have you here, even though you was busting LSU ass for all of that time. It was very frustrating. It was very frustrating.
I'm not sorry.
I just want to let you know, and Coach Summit and Shamika Holtzclaw, it was just very frustrating watching it every single year. We was going to lose by 30, but we love you anyway. Just want to make sure that you guys know that Tamika's also founded the Catch the Stars Foundation, which empowers youth through fitness, literacy, and mentoring programs. So if you have an opportunity to support that from one of the most decorated athletes in American history, you guys, world history, you guys should do that as well. Tamika, thank you for joining us on Higher Learning. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Rachel. Appreciate y'all.
Thank
you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, Rach, that's enough. That's enough podcast for today.
That is enough. That is enough.
That's definitely
enough. Tamika was great. It's fantastic. Honored to have her on the podcast. Yeah.
Honored. Honored. One of the greatest of all time. A GOAT. A GOAT, goddammit. All right. Taking caps off. Not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I am Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.